and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I'm Joel A. Erickson. I'm joined, as always, by Nate Atkins. Nate has a fresh haircut and is freshly back from Orlando, where the NFL owners meetings, they call them the annual meetings. Owners meetings is just how everybody says it. We're going to say owners meetings. Jim Irsay was not there this year. Typically, he's the highlight of the event. Nate, you're in Orlando. First of all, I've never been to Orlando. I assume it's basically just Disney and like all of the theme parks, basically.
Yeah, it's Disney. It's we were staying right outside our hotel, which is 5 minutes from the Ritz-Carlton. We don't stay at the Ritz-Carlton because we're not NFL owners. So we stayed at another hotel around the corner, and right next to it's a theme park. And that hotel happened to be the one that almost all the media stayed at. So I think that hotel that for those 3 days was split between a bunch of sports writers and kids going to Disney. So it was a very interesting mix of all that. But yeah, I did not go to Disney someday, but it was my first time in Orlando, and it was fun though. It was 75 and sunny. And as someone who's not about the heat, that's my time of year for Florida. So it was better. Last year I was in that area in July when I was doing the Anthony Richardson story. So I like this temperature a lot better.
I'm going to risk offending somebody who listens to the pod here, but I would say I'd be a little uncomfortable going to Disney just as an adult male with no family around me.
That's fair. That was the dilemma. I don't know how I could really pull that off. So,
I've never been to Disney, but I know that's not how I want to go. Is by myself with no children or anybody else around.
I'm obsessed with roller coasters and rides that are very scary. But I can just go to Cedar Point again, which is probably a better amusement park, and not run that same risk.
There we go. Our first hot take of the podcast. I haven't been to either. I love roller coasters too, but I've not been to either. My kids aren't old enough to ruin my back on roller coasters yet.
Just say a couple more years. A couple more years and you'll make it there.
Oh, because my kids are big. So when we went to the Indiana State Fair, I was like, oh wait, the 7-year-old is big enough to ride a lot of things all of a sudden. So we're headed that way. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to getting back on the roller coasters, whenever that happens. So you got no Jim Irsay. He's still from a health standpoint, still in recovery, rehabbing from some of the physical challenges he's had over the winter. But you did get Shane Steichen. You did get Chris Ballard. This is going to end up being a podcast where I end up asking you a lot of questions. You were able to be there this year. We only send one. What's your main takeaway from? Is there an overarching takeaway for how those two men feel about the Colts going forward? I think we can get into, depending on what you say here, some of the more pressing questions in a little bit. But do you have an overarching takeaway for how they view the Colts heading into next season? Because the last thing we had was, this is a team that should be competing for the division, for the playoffs, should be able to take the next step after last year.
Yeah, I think the way they look at this team is they won 9 games last year, came within a fourth down conversion of making the playoffs and winning the AFC South and getting a home playoff game. And all season long, they had 2 snaps between Anthony Richardson and Jonathan Taylor. And ultimately, though they got flashes out of both at different times of the year, they, in their minds, in terms of the total output, got something closer to the worst versions of them because of availability and because it took Taylor so long to actually become that guy again until he was late in the season after he got back from the thumb injury. So I think that they think the combination of those two, if they can find a way to keep them on the field, and you combine that with everything else they did in the offensive line with Shane Steichen's play calling, with Michael Pittman Jr. now under contract, Josh Downs coming back. On defense is where they did a lot of the re-signings to bring back their own guys. I think they could be a force with those guys. The interesting dilemma, though, is that it's still so theoretical for them. It's still like, we hope, we believe, we want this to happen without having seen it yet. And I think that's causing them to hedge just a little bit as far as their aggressiveness in free agency compared to a team like the Texans, who don't have to wonder what will it look like when we have CJ Stroud out there every game, because they just got that. And they just were the team that won the AFC South. And they're the team that's going out and getting, you know, Danielle Hunter and Danico Autry and Joe Mixon and other guys, because they think, like, we got to a certain step already. We won the AFC South. We won one playoff game. We want to contend for the Super Bowl. The Colts are trying to take that first step of, let's get to the playoffs. Let's get a home playoff game. And they're just, it seems like they're just waiting to see a little bit more out of what they hope and believe will happen in that backfield that they haven't seen yet. And it's an interesting spot to be in, because, like, on one hand, I think if you really believe that about your backfield, like, you should go out and add those guys on defense that can give them that ultimate high ceiling. But I think part of them is wanting to see both of those players stay on the field and stay healthy, because otherwise those signings in the secondary and elsewhere won't ultimately matter. And so it's a weird mix of both high energy and I think a little bit of nerves too.
You touched on the secondary. Are there signings coming? We would like signings.
I firmly expect at least one significant signing in at safety. My read on what's going on. They've been monitoring. I mean, the safety market's the one that is, like, it's frozen. They're not running out of the priority guys. There's still Justin Simmons. There's still Quandre Diggs. And then Julian Blackmon is still hanging out there. And I know that they are in contact with Julian Blackmon. They re-engaged that actually more than the past week. I think he's, like these other safeties, has gone around and realized that maybe the value for any one of them isn't going to be what they wanted, since the market's diluted. And they said, Chris Ballard said, we know we need to add here. And if you kind of read between the comments of him and Shane Steichen, they seem a lot more glowing about what they have at outside corner in Juju Brents and Jalen Jones than the collective group at safety. And if I had to guess, I think that signing will come as strong safety. I think there's still a belief in Nick Cross, still at least the hope to give him that chance now that they played the waiting game, that they traded a future pick for him. They saw some flashes, even though, you know, it was inconsistent, but in a small sample late in the year. Strong safety has felt like that position, especially with what we know about how they want a veteran in that spot. They've gone from Rodney McLeod to Julian Blackmon. It doesn't seem feasible to just kind of roll back with the young players they have there or go to the draft for it. So I think whether it's Julian Blackmon or maybe a slight upgrade to a Quandre Diggs or maybe a player who's similar to Julian Blackmon, there's a couple others out there. That's the position that I would count on. I don't think we'll see it at outside corner, mostly because that's just a move that already would have been made already. Like, there's the good players that were at corner that you could talk yourself into have signed. You know, Kendall Fuller is one, Chidobe Awuzie. Most of those guys that would feel like those more surefire starter types are gone. And there's other guys I think you could talk yourself into, like, they're better than what the Colts have, but I don't think that's where their headspace is after they feel like, you know, Juju Brents is really talented, but hasn't, you know, he has to get over his injuries. And then Jalen Jones, they just think they might have unlocked something there. So I think strong safety is the one position they feel like they got to add.
So you don't think there's like a Xavier Rhodes type signing coming?
Not at that level, I don't. I think they will sign a veteran to the room, probably more, this is not going to be a popular thing to hear, probably more in the Brandon Faison zone. Some player that can sort of...
Technically, money-wise, they were kind of the same, I think, at least one of those deals.
Yeah, probably. I think it's more like they realize they need numbers. They need, you know, Juju Brents. They are concerned about the health to a point. So they know they, in Dallas Flyers coming off the Achilles tear, they know they need more guys at that spot. I don't think they look at it as like, we need more starters necessarily. Now, I'm talking more about free agency with this. It's still possible that they look to the draft and think, because I the sense I got was just that they didn't they didn't fall in love with any corner option, truly in love with any corner option. They didn't seem to like the free agent options enough to go and sign one for reasonable money. And then L'Jarius Sneed, I know that they liked him enough to check in at a certain point with him, but they were never, that was never going to come to fruition. They didn't go hard after that, you know, at all. That was not even the guy they went hardest at in this free agency process. So,
what you're saying is on previous podcasts, we weren't wrong.
Right. We were not wrong. As far as like I said, though, it's possible that they're in love with the free agent or the rookie classic corner. That would be the one thing that's out there. That's if there's a guy or two that they think could be at 15 that are like high talent, could be like, you know, premium type players that they're not seeing in some of these older options and free agency. I still think the door is open for a pick there, but I just don't think we're going to see the veteran upgrade at cornerback.
Let's talk about Jalen Jones for a second, because like the way I view Jalen Jones is already like a worthwhile seventh round pick. He's already paid that off. Much, you know, gave them much more than you'd expect from a seventh round pick, started most of the season. I did think that there was towards the end of the season, it felt like he kind of ran into some struggles. Maybe it could be rookie wall type thing. But there's also sort of the nagging piece for me that, you know, we just saw Rodney Thomas go from a player that we probably incorrectly thought had a pretty decent rookie season as a seventh round starter. But then, you know, he's lost his job to Nick Cross in his second season. Like there's a piece of me that just thinks you might have something there with Jalen Jones, but you don't really know it yet. But it sounds like to me that what you're saying is like from what the Colts told you, they think they've got something there.
Yeah, they think really highly of him. I think Rodney Thomas is a decent comp because a year ago at this time, they thought the same thing of Rodney and they made him the starter and they held off a long time in introducing Nick Cross to that competition.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I said we maybe incorrectly judged him, but we didn't incorrectly judge how the Colts thought about him, because you're right. They held on to Rodney Thomas as a starter for a long, long time.
Yeah. I think one key difference to point out that I think what happened with Rodney Thomas a little bit is the situation around him wasn't as good the next year because they didn't have Stephon Gilmore. I think he helps the young players around him a lot. And you put a little bit more pressure on that free safety losing Stephon Gilmore and going down to what they had last year, which was not anywhere close. And it just exposed some of the areas that Rodney Thomas doesn't quite have in his game as far as some of his aggressiveness and ability to go there and make the play down the field. And their communication suffered overall too. The argument you can make for Jalen Jones is he didn't have a great situation. You know, there's a belief that he can get better rather than worse because the situation you would think could get better rather than worse. But the flip side of that is his pass rush was quite good. I mean, that helps the corners that they had out there. And there were moments where, you know, you had DeForest Buckner in the face of somebody, or you had, you know, multiple guys crowding the pocket, plays that ended in sacks because they were top five in the league in sacks, the most any Indianapolis Colts team has ever had. So if that part of the game slips off, that's where I think we could see something similar to Rodney Thomas, where some of the gaps in Jalen Jones's game, which happened late in the year when teams went into max protect and took that pass rush out, I think that's when that could show up. Yeah, I think Jalen Jones, same thing. I think it's going to be a great seventh round pick. At the very minimum, he's a guy who should factor into your cornerback room and can be great on special teams. And he might have he might work out as a starter, but late in the year, I do think we saw some of the reasons why he, you know, was a later pick to a point. He's tackling is somewhere he has to really, really get better at. Some of the run fits, just some of his physical plays. And then, you know, and then the matchups with top receivers like Davante Adams, which of course are really hard, but that's what they're going to go up against. So eventually this team's going to get in the playoffs and have to guard a Jamar Chase or Stephon Diggs or an Amari Cooper. And you want to believe that that guy has that somewhat capability. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how, like, there, I think what they think is if they get a lot better safety play, they'll lessen the stress on those outside corners. And so I think that's why that position is more likely the one they're going to go after. Now, if they bring back Julian Blackman, I don't know, you make the argument of like, what did you actually change? But right. I think their argument would be, well, it's another year in the system. Julian had a great year. It's really about, can Nick Cross hit at free safety? You know, you can kind of see how they arrive at this, but it is risky because they're betting on stuff that has to come together, young players who haven't proven it yet.
I'll go the negative route here. I'll go the pushback route since I wasn't there. Not that you're not advocating for what they're doing. Nate is explaining what they think. I want to make that clear. Nate's explaining what they think. So I'm more my counter argument is going to be more towards what the Colts are saying, not what Nate's saying. You could make an argument that you already got the best you're going to get from Julian Blackman. Like, that could be his peak, right?
Yeah.
Therefore, like, if you do bring back Julian Blackman, and you're basically putting all of the pressure on Nick Cross. Nick Cross has to work out, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, he has to be what they thought he was when they drafted him in the third round. After the defensive coaching staff was like unwilling to put him on the field for 14 games last year. That's a lot on Nick Cross. That's a lot to put on Nick Cross. Now I will say this, it is his third year. It's time for him to show that he's a full-time starter in the NFL. I'm just saying from a roster construction, how this could affect your season standpoint. You a lot is hinging on Nick Cross turning into a bona fide, consistent NFL free safety.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder why, if that was the plan, why did we not see him till like January, you know, in a full-time starter role? So that's where it feels a little disjointed, you know, like you compare it to, they placed a bet on Bernard Raimann, and we said this a year ago. Their line wasn't going to work out unless Bernard Raimann worked out, and then he did work out. And Raimann, of course, struggled as a rookie, but he got to play that entire second half, start every game. He got a runway. I just don't know that Nick has played enough to work through some of that. Like, we saw him in that final game against the Texans where the first play of the game, C.J. Stroud went at their mix-up in communication. Nick Cross came down into the box. It left Juju Brents one-on-one way down the field with Nico Collins, which is never going to be Juju's game, and they scored an early touchdown. That's going to happen with young players, the same way Bernard Raimann's going to give up a sack against a good veteran. But you want to get that out in like week 8, week 9, or have more of those moments to learn from. Instead, I think what they did is they try to play patient with Nick. They did love the work he put in behind the scenes and some of the flashes he did late in the year, but now they're expecting him to take a humongous leap to being like a down in and down out, at least solid, reliable player at free safety. Because yeah, they don't have, if it doesn't work at free safety, you can start to see a lot of concerns creep in. Julian Blackman, if he's back, and I like, he had a great year last year, but there are some injury concerns with him. Juju Brents has the injury concerns, as we've been through. Jalen Jones is still needing to prove himself. And Kenny Moore is really good, but he's the guy that's at your nickel. So, yeah, it would be a huge bet on Nick Cross. But I also like we don't know which strong safety they're going to bring in. If I had to guess, I think Julian Blackman he's certainly an option. I wouldn't say he's the most likely option. It's possible they go a step above, or at least a step that's maybe not above, but more proven, more less injury risk. I think about a guy like Quandre Diggs could play that role, and maybe they feel like that solidifies the things around them. It is going to be a bet no matter what, though. Like, if they wanted to avoid that, they would have gone out and either trade for Legarius Sneed, signed Kendall Fuller, or signed Justin Simmons, and like really gone more at a certain position here. They're going to introduce some risk no matter what they do.
Offensively, we kind of already talked about the belief in Anthony Richardson and Jonathan Taylor together. But I don't think I'm super surprised that they haven't done anything in free agency in the offensive side, because I think like that's always seemed to me to be a like better fit for the draft this year.
Mm-hmm.
Just with depth at those positions in the draft, and honestly, with the amount of young players the Colts already have at most positions, on the young depth they already have on the, you know, offensive side of the football. What was your takeaway from Ballard and probably from Shane more on the offensive side?
Yeah, it seems like a unit they mostly want to roll back as what it is and then implement Anthony Richardson there and see what that does for certain pieces. Like, I think they are still bullish enough on Alec Pierce and what he can provide as a deep threat if they get a quarterback who's going to actually go after those type of plays. And now they have two, you know, big arm quarterbacks in Anthony Richardson and Joe Flacco. And so I think signing Joe Flacco was about finding a way to build out an offense that's going to be aggressive down the field now, that they feel like they have some pieces that can do that with Pierce, Josh Downs. They tapped into that a little bit. If they can get Jelani Woods on the field, and then some of the trick plays Shane develops that can play into that too. So I think they're pretty bullish on just the idea that if they just need to get Anthony and Jonathan out there, and that's where that conversation is about, like, how do you build your offense to where those guys can be electric but not be overused, over-risked. So I think that's going to challenge them as far as divvying up the carries between those two. I know they were interested in bringing back Zach Moss as a helpful piece in this. He just, you know, he found a starting opportunity. So maybe they like Trey Sermon enough to do that. I do think they're going to try to find ways to get carries to somebody else at times. But for the most part, I think they feel like they're mostly set, except I do sense that they're very open to adding another pass catcher. And we know tight end is a possibility, just in terms of they don't have a proven guy there. I think wide receiver, the same argument applies, where, like, as much as they're intrigued and believe that Alec Pierce can do stuff for them down the field, it doesn't mean they can't add another guy at that spot who can play on the outside, you know, play more if they end up having an injury to those top three guys, which they basically didn't have last year. And they just trust Shane to kind of work it out, where if you have too many talented pass catchers, that's going to be Shane's wheelhouse. So I think adding more, you know, they talk about a lot about adding yak and explosiveness to their offense. And so part of that is those taking those deep shots, which are not yak plays, but they're high air yards, vertical plays down the field. But it's also trying to find I think they want to find an extra tight end or wide receiver who could do a little bit more underneath explosively with the ball in his hands. And so that's why I think that's still a pretty good option in the first round this year.
Yeah, they Ballard sort of – we talked about this on the pod, but Ballard maybe slipped a little bit at the combine in his interview with Kevin Bowen and Andy Sweeney on 1070 The Fan. Right at the end of it, I remember him saying, you know, we've got – Jonathan Taylor, he can create explosive stuff in the run game. What we need is that yak guy. And I was like, wait, whoa, we're letting out desires now. That's usually something the coach does, not Ballard at that point. But I hope we discussed that on a prior podcast, because I remember hearing that in the radio interview. They did the radio interview after we talked to him at the combine, and I was like, he's talked too much this week. He may have just let something slip a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I got that same impression from that. And if you think about the way that, you know, a lot of what they're going to do on offense is building, like I wrote about this when I went to Philadelphia, they're rightfully so taking the Jalen Hurts playbook and putting it in here for a very similar style of quarterback. And how do you kind of develop that guy who's a really good runner, develop more of his passing, get him comfortable, get him connected with the players around him? And what the Eagles did was they went crazy after wide receiver once they felt like they had a guy they wanted to put back there in Jalen Hurts, and they traded for A.J. Brown. And, you know, around the time I think that was right after they drafted Devontae Smith, and they also had Dallas Goedert. And, like, they never felt like they had too many guys. In fact, they wanted a lot of different options here. And so get a lot of different traits too. And if you think about the traits that they have in this current offense, it's, you know, it's Alec Pierce can fly down the field, which is good. Pittman is somewhat of a yak. I mean, he is a good yak player, but he's also, you know, he's kind of your bailout contested player. You know, there's some yak with Josh Downs, but I think like a guy that they can design up like truly explosive yak is the thing that I think they want a little bit more out of it. It's why it's been easy to tie them to Brock Bowers. You know, is that perfect fit at tight end if he's there at 15? And then outside of that, I mean, Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy, those are guys that have been kind of linked to the Colts that they have put a lot of time into studying at their pro days and whatnot that could also be in that range. And then who knows? I'm not ruling out some kind of move up to go get a guy either. So we'll see how that plays out.
Ooh, that's spicy. That's very spicy. A move up in the draft in the first round?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
we'll see
how it.
I don't think this would happen, Nate. But I just have to check. Do you think that you maybe accidentally wandered into Mickey Loomis's press conference instead of Chris Ballard's?
That's right. Maybe. Or just the Eagles, right? I still think Shane's on the Eagles, so they're gonna operate like that.
Howie Roseman does not look like Chris Ballard, but did you accidentally Shane and Nick were walking together and Nick went one way and you just accidentally ended up with Howie Roseman?
Yeah, it's like I forgot which team I'm covering.
Were there other Colts reporters there with you? Because you know, a trade up in the first round.
Wow. They haven't even drafted a one in the first round. So now we're just like, now I'm just going crazy with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm concerned. I'm concerned that Nate went to Orlando and the GMs could be using decoys. Was Mickey Loomis wearing a Colts hat?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe.
Although I will say this, at the owners' meetings, they typically don't wear team gear. So.
Maybe they're pulling a Connor Stallions and just totally tricked. I guess the way I'm trying to, I mean, it's unlikely they would trade up in the first given their everything they've shown us for like 8 years here. But the thing I want to emphasize with that is the only thing I can sense that they think they need on the offense right now is one more explosive pass catcher. So sometimes if you feel like you're that one piece away and it's that important to you, which in this case is really getting the most out of Anthony Richardson, I think it has to be on the table. It all depends on how it shakes out. If Brock Bowers falls to 15, then I guess like why would you didn't need to trade up for him? And it's a deep receiver class of a lot of options. If Ballard brought that up, like deep in its talent, so yeah, they could sit there and they're going to be fine. You're going to get someone at 15 that I think will be someone to get excited for. But I don't know. I just hear enough out there about just how teams keep shuffling the board at the top of the receivers, you know, where it's Marvin Harrison number one. Is it Malik Nabers? Is it Roma Dunze? How much do you read into them not working out? Then there's the rush up for quarterbacks where now, you know, teams may go up to get J.J. McCarthy. The Cardinals at 4, the Chargers at 5, both seem like very likely trade down teams. I'm just not rolling it out.
Nate, that's the spiciest take anyone's had on the podcast. That's a full-out, that's a cover zero blitz.
That is.
That's a cover zero blitz. You have to get home because I am all by myself.
Yeah, I don't know how you take you're going to be Juju Brents covering Nico Collins down the field if I don't get home on this one.
So. I've got multiple receivers running deep. There's nothing I've got. I don't know which one to take. You've left me on an island. You better get home.
All right. I just want to excite people about the idea of them trading up for Marvin Harrison. Nothing beyond that.
I'm not even on normally when we talk about like being on an island, it's like against one. I'm more like a stationary island with a bunch of ships flying past me.
Yeah, because That's how it will feel if we get to draft day and actually they trade down twice. Now actually the opposite plan, total opposite plan.
If we get there and they trade down twice, that's going to be like the guy you are covering just gets a hot route like two steps away and everybody else comes and blocks me. The other interesting thing I think that makes it a cover zero blitz take is, which is fun. It's fun to have a few cover zero blitzes on the cover two every once in a while.
Yeah.
But like this free agency period has taught us that Chris Ballard is never going to change. So
that's true.
So yeah, it's a bold one. That's a bold one from Nate Atkins. On the other hand, if you hit, this is the biggest sack fumble since the one against the Falcons when it was 28-3.
That's true. That would be a collapse. I mean, the only thing I will say about Chris Ballard, though, is the way I understand him to operate is he does not make a lot of aggressive swings, but once in a while, there's one player to him that is like, that's the perfect player, and I got to go do it. And there's a guy this year in free agency that he did that with, who's not here. There is, he did that with DeForest Buckner in that trade. Ultimately, he got to a similar place with Carson Wentz, now mistakenly, but they paid a lot more for him than I ever thought that they needed to or should have. It hasn't happened in this way. It hasn't happened in the draft go up significantly and go get him. The closest would have been Jonathan Taylor when Jim Irsay kind of pushed him to make a small move up to get him. But I don't know. It'll be discussions they have, though. It's just as far as like Shane Steichen comes from the mold of like, how do we build Jalen Hurts? We went aggressive as all hell after wide receivers. And one move they did, we'd never seen Ballard extend a wide receiver until he just extended Michael Pittman Jr. I just have a feeling that if they're going to do anything of significance on offense, that's what they're going to do.
Nate has shifted. I think cover zero is not quite enough. This is like in Madden when the other team is on the 20-yard line and you run goal with a first and 10 and you run field goal block. Which, depending on your opponent, in Nate's defense, depending on your opponent, a well-timed field goal or punt block as a defensive play is not the worst thing.
Yeah, it's all about, does anyone see it coming? No one would ever see this coming out of Chris Ballard. So, field goal block will work.
Anything else from the owners' meetings? That probably pretty much wraps it up. They haven't really signed anybody, so we don't have a whole lot else to go with there.
Not necessarily. I think it just sort of reinforced what we assumed was going on with them. Like they're obviously they went crazy after their own in-house free agents, bringing back like 10 of them, I guess. But spending quite a bit of money to do that. I think they looked at it as they realized by like they didn't want to get to the day free agency opens because they felt like Kenny Moore, Grover Stewart, and Tyquan Lewis were going to have very warm markets and they were going to lose them if they waited. And so I think that factored into when they briefly looked at L'Jarius Sneed, they moved off that to their next plan was bring back those guys and roll it back and build continuity here with Gus Bradley. And, you can feel about that a couple of different ways because it wasn't good enough last year. So at what point does continuity pay off in that way? But
I can tell you right now how most Colts fans feel about it.
Yeah, that's exactly how they do. I think it did reinforce that Ballard's approaches in a lot of ways are not changing because he had to decide between, all right, do I pay up and give the biggest nickel contract ever to Kenny Moore? Do I pay the same inflation-adjusted rate to Grover Stewart as he's going into his 30s? And do I pay for Tyquan Lewis, who had one healthy season, but not, do I be the top bidder on Tyquan Lewis? But his alternative was it's either that or you're going to gamble on players that you don't know and another team might walk away. And that's just the way that he's going to view this. Like, and I think in general, he's right about free agency in a lot of ways. There are teams that get themselves in trouble.
Jacksonville Jaguars.
Jacksonville Jaguars, for sure. And other teams, to his credit, it does show the skill they have in drafting to have this many players worth bringing back. That's usually what happens in free agency, is that teams spend because they don't have – they have money to spend and they don't have – they didn't draft well enough. So they had to go fix it. But I think the counter side of that too is, like, I think sometimes Chris Ballard looks – if you take that mindset too far, you're now looking for reasons not to believe in guys in free agency. Whereas, like, sometimes you have to be willing to say, like, hey, is this an absolutely perfect player? No, but he can really help us. And I think one example that they lucked out with was Rodney McLeod in that way. But they need, you know, that guy was coming off an injury, is older. You could
Xavier Rhodes. That's another one.
Xavier Rhodes.
But like, Xavier Rhodes, yeah.
Some of these guys can get over their injuries and be exactly what you need in a veteran that you can't get in the draft right now. And I just, that's the open-mindedness to those type of free agents that's still kind of lacking.
The other thing here, we paid a lot of money to our own free agents. Gentle pushback. Maybe not so gentle. Like, Kenny Moore got the biggest deal ever for a nickel corner, but it's $10 million a year. Like, have you looked, again, not talking to Nate here, but talking to, like, the Colts. Have you looked at what, like, the major positions are getting? Like, you just signed Michael Pittman for $23 million a year. That means Kenny Moore's not even half of that. You know, yeah. Grover Stewart, $13 million, right?
Yeah,
that's not that much. Did you see like what I know he's a nose tackle versus a three technique, but like, did you see what Chris Jones got paid? Like, in terms of like, that's a big investment in your own guy, is what they gave Chris Jones, or what the 49ers gave Wilkins. Yeah, Christian Wilkins is an outside guy, but yeah, like, that's another big, like, these are $25 million. Tyquan Lewis, yeah, Tyquan Lewis had a market. I love Tyquan Lewis. I thought Tyquan Lewis had a very underrated season. Ultimately, that cost you like $6 million, $5 million, something like that. Like, yeah. You're investing money in your own guys, but outside of, and it is good money for them, but outside of Pittman's contract, which I think Pittman's contract by the end of the offseason might be like 15th or something, yeah, in terms of average annual value. Like, outside of Pittman, yes, you paid big deals, but were they like the enormous deals in terms of what percentage of the cap they take up? I don't know.
Yeah, they're like significant deals. Zaire Franklin's was a significant raise, but they're, outside of Pittman, they're all at positions where the, like you said, the total investment is not going to be too crazy. And the other thing too is like you said, Pittman's deal will end up looking more reasonable when other guys sign. There's a huge wave about to do it with Justin Jefferson, Jamar, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Now, Pittman did it the way he did it so that he could re-up in 2 years. And so, you know, there's a chance for that he ends up making a lot of money in the long run doing it.
I thought that was really smart by him and his agent. Like, they're not going to let us get to free agency. They're going to franchise tag me. So let's sign, but let's find a way to still reap the benefits of the market by making it short and giving me a chance to go in after all these guys sign. I thought that was like, I think that's a kind of move that you can make in specific positions. I think it's really smart. I mean, because he's still getting paid a lot of money for this, so it's not like you're risking him never getting a big second deal if he gets hurt. And you're also not totally giving up on the idea of like a really, really big contract.
Yeah, and he's setting up to where the way the cap keeps going up, contracts keep going up at that position, he may sign a just as big of a deal in 2 to 3 years that he just signed. And then the Colts just, you know, he'll put the Colts in a position where they decide, like, do we re-up him and keep doing that, or do we just pay the receiver we traded up for in the first?
Yep. No, we've heard a lot of this for, it's just how they're going to operate. It's just how they're going to operate. And I think maybe the surprising thing to me is that, like you said, you know, we had a quarterback on a rookie deal. We have more flexibility. Again, I've made this point before, but I really don't really think from their perspective, like selling the Kenny Moore and Grover Stewart deals as huge investments is a little bit of a it's a little bit misleading because they're basically on your payroll for the exact same thing they were on last year. It's a little bit misleading. Like Pittman's raise, Franklin's raise, Tyquan Lewis's raise to some extent, sure. But those other guys, like, yes, you paid Kenny Moore and Grover Stewart good market money for them, but it's what you were paying them last year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's – and I certainly tried to push Ballard on that because I brought up the fact that, like, every other team that is in this spot with a quarterback they believe in who's not a rookie but is on a rookie deal, including all three in their division, have gone after outside free agents. And they haven't. And one of the counters to that is, those teams often that draft these quarterbacks high don't have as many players to re-sign as the Colts did, you know, where they just had a one random disaster year in 2022, but otherwise have built some pretty good players they've drafted and developed. But still, like other teams have gone out and not just brought, like the Texans could have brought back Jonathan Grenard. They went out and they got Danielle Hunter. Like some of these teams decide to up it. Like we've got more money, so we're going to upgrade and we're going to go after something even higher because we have the money, we have the flexibility to do it. And the Colts are just aren't that team. And with free agency, they aren't that team with some of the other moves that other teams make as far as like you extend a player, drop his cap hit, create all this more space and then utilize it. They haven't been that type of team either. They still at their heart are going to be a draft and develop team. And I think that comment about flexibility, honestly, I took it this way at the time and it's playing out that way. I think he just meant it's more flexibility to bring back even more of our own guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, he did.
And he did.
He brought back Taven Bryan.
I think in their view, one of their luxury moves is like Tyquan Lewis, where he doesn't have a starting spot here. And, you know, they got interest. They knew there was going to be multiple teams interested in him. But, yeah, I mean, that's like when your swing is a two-year $12 million guy, like, yeah. And that's – I mean, it goes back. They don't take these swings at the premium positions very often. If there were more re-signings like Pittman, then I think we could entertain that idea more. You know, and maybe they will. Maybe in a few years they're extending Bernard Raimann and Juju Brents and eventually Anthony Richardson. And so we'll eventually get to see that test. But so far it's been every position they pay is one they can afford to not pay a lot to relative to the market.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. That'll be it for the Colts Cover 2 podcast for this week. We probably won't have it next week because I'm on vacation. I don't know. Nate could just get on here and talk by himself for 45 minutes.
Well, now that I'm in the, you know, the Cover 0 blitz mode, I'm just going to have one that's just all hot takes.
Just been a super hot takey. Nate also, like, I'm going on vacation, so that's good for me. But the flip side is – Nate is having a much – we're recording this on Thursday, the morning of opening day for most of Major League Baseball and the start of the Sweet 16, which is an incredible sports day. But Nate's is much better than mine. Do you know why, Nate?
Because the Guardians play.
And the Brewers don't. My team does not play on opening day because of a rainout in New York.
That's brutal. I mean, I have to wait until 10 p.m. to watch – the Guardians against
the West Coast,
the amazing Athletics, but but hey, I'll take a win on opening day and I will stay up for it.
Is Blackburn starting for the Athletics?
I don't know.
That's the only way you're not going to have a win on opening day is if Blackburn pitches and has a good day.
Very true.
This will be my mini rant just for the end of the podcast. My team has a retractable roof. Just take later in the season, like when they when they did this schedule and the computer popped it out and it said Milwaukee at New York, early or late March, opening day, right? You just they only play the Mets twice. They play them once at home and once on the road. You just go into the schedule and you go, okay, we're just gonna flip that.
Yeah. Especially when they decided it like the day before.
Because we have a retractable roof. You can't cancel opening day in Milwaukee.
That's brutal. I feel bad about this.
And I was making a you know, friends of the pod, well, and technically a coworker for me, Chris Hagan, and some of the other TV guys laugh yesterday about this. So here's the reason I'm so mad. Not number one, I love opening day and I love baseball. But number two, the way this set up was they had a Thursday game and then they were off Friday when I'm driving south. And then they start playing again on Saturday once I'm stationary again. So I was going to not miss anything on Friday. Now they are not playing today when I'm here. And they're playing at 1:40 tomorrow when I will be on I-65 somewhere in Tennessee.
Hey, baseball is fun on the radio too. So you have something to pass the time.
My week got exponentially worse when because you're right, they postponed it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about the weather in New York, but you couldn't wait like even a little bit, like just to see.
It's like they're just trying to make you mad.
Oh yeah. Well, they also targeted the Colts media room with their early postponements.
That's right.
Because Fox 59 CBS4 broadcaster Alexa Ross is a Phillies fan, and Matt Conte, who is the Colts PR head, who we work with all the time, him and I are frequently talking about baseball, is also a Phillies fan, and they got their game canceled. So everybody else gets to have opening day except us. It's not nice. I don't like it.
Yeah, and I did feel
a little bit for – well, actually, I take that back. I felt for Padres fans. I don't feel for Dodgers fans on anything. That their opening day was last week, and it was at 3 in the morning their time. That's
– oh, no. You got to wake up at 3 in the morning to watch a $350 million
– yeah, zero issue for with the – like, sorry, Dodgers fans. Oh, no.
Would you have watched that if the Brewers played it? 3 a.m.
in the morning?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
I was thinking that too. I would watch the Guardians if they did.
1,000%. I didn't watch the whole game, but I watched part of the Dodgers Padres games. Because they started at 6 o'clock here. I woke up and turned it on and watched part of it while I was getting the baby ready to go to daycare and then coming back. So but 3 in the morning, yes, I would have woken up to watch opening day. Opening day in baseball, like I know I covered the NFL, and the first game is always a big deal. Opening day has sort of an extra mysticism to it that
– yeah.
I watched Bull Durham last night to sort of make up for – I assume your favorite baseball movie is Major League.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be.
It's Cleveland-based. Of course, it's yeah. Major League. It doesn't really work with our schedules now with free agency, but – my last job, I would take opening day off every year just to sit back and have fun, especially when it combines with the tournament. Like, there's just too many sports on, but it's – hey.
Well, that's the other thing. I had a perfect day. Brewers at 1, tournament later.
Yeah, that's the one thing. My game's going to run into the tournament, but
– and New York was like
– but you're not going to listen to anybody whine about their team playing on opening day.
And Major League Baseball was like, you know what? What if we put them in New York where there's no roof? Rainouts actually don't bother me as much later in the season, but raining out opening day, just avoid that as much as possible. I know schedules are hard. I get it. Whatever you got to do.
I've dealt with snowouts on opening day. The Guardians once lost an entire opening weekend to snow.
That's a crime.
That was rough. they were screwed trying to make up those days too. So
that's infuriating.
So luckily, this is where it's nice to play on the road against the Athletics. Get an easy win. Don't worry about weather. You know,
prayers up for Nate if you're listening to this tomorrow and the Athletic and the Guardians lost 5-3 to the Athletics.
Oh my gosh, I will go to bed in a foul mood. It'll be like in the morning when that game's over.
My favorite baseball movie is Bull Durham. It is. Like, I was watching it last night, and like, I don't think there's a I don't. Obviously, if you ask me who my favorite character is in a baseball movie, it's Bob Uecker as Harry Doyle. Bob Uecker is my favorite baseball personality in general. And I know I should pick Major League because Uke's in it, but the movie that like every scene hits me is like Bull Durham. Like the telling the pitches, like he shook me off, so throw the fastball, like all that stuff. All that stuff is just like, I just love it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. My favorite character is Lou Brown. So
Lou Brown is great. I was going to make a case though that the Bull Durham manager, he's not Lou Brown, but he does not get enough credit in that movie for how fun he is in that movie, because Robert Wool is next to him as the assistant Larry, and he's doing like a bunch of comedy stuff, and so like he kind of gets the shine there when people talk about Bull Durham. But the manager, and I have to look him up because he actually tragically passed after the like 7 months after the movie was made, so we're not as used to seeing him. We're dipping into like my rewatchables podcast listening right now, but his name in the movie, I think, is Joe Riggins. And his as an actor, his name is Trey Wilson. I might have those backwards. But the scene where Crash Davis tells him he can scare them, and he goes in and does the lollygag thing, like, it's incredible. It's incredible. There's also some great faces from him. There's also some great faces from him anytime he like asks his assistants like what's going on with Nuke, and they respond with like answers about garters and breathing out of the wrong eyelid. He makes some just unbelievable like cantankerous manager faces. Like I don't think he's a better character than Lou Brown. I just think he's underrated. Like, if I'm making my baseball movie coaching staff, I want him on the staff.
Yeah, he can be like
he can be bench coach for Lou Brown.
Or like first base coach. Like, get him front and center a little bit.
Oh, so he can do some more of the like lollygagging stuff. Yeah.
You remind me, I gotta go watch them. I haven't watched Bull Durham in so long. So I need to
I love it. I love it so much. I love a lot of baseball movies. That shouldn't surprise listeners of the podcast. But I was watching it last night. I was like, I think this is my favorite one.
Dang, you were watching that last night and imagining what would it be like to sit down for opening day.
No, I watched it. I watched it on purpose because at that point I already knew baseball was canceled for me.
Oh,
luckily,
that's a good idea. That's a way to pivot.
Luckily, since you were at the owners' meetings, I went down and interviewed Paul Skeens yesterday. Mm-hmm. The podcast listeners don't know who that is, that's the number one draft pick in last year's draft. He's out of LSU, had an insane College World Series, throws triple digits, and is going to be in the majors at some point soon. So like, I did get a taste of opening day professionally as well. Like, I was down on the field. It was sunny. Victory Field looked great. There's, you know, Paul Skeens is enormous. Like, he's huge. So getting to talk about like baseball and doing all that, I got a little bit of that. But right while I was leaving the house to go down and cover that is when I got the notification on my phone that the Brewers game had been postponed, which was just a real punch in the solar plexus. Like, this pain.
Oh, well, At least tomorrow you can listen to it for 3 hours on a highway.
Well, and the other piece of that is like if my wife, if I can talk my wife into driving at that point in the day.
Oh yeah, pull out the phone.
Yeah, little MLB TV app.
Too much in the sticks where the data goes in and out, and
yeah, that's not great either. Yeah, but like even if I could just like watch the first couple of innings and listen to the rest of them.
I'm just picturing you screaming at a phone that's frozen on a highway after not watching the night before.
Well, and it's not just me. That's the important part to realize is that like I have my two older sons are 7 and 5 and are baseball fans. So like this is a whole family thing.
Yeah.
And if people are wondering, like, you know what, I typically do the driving. It goes either way. I typically end up doing a lot of the driving. So normally I'm in the driver's seat, but I might try to switch roles. Maybe.
Once she senses how sad you are today to not have the Brewers, it may play into your favor.
Anyway, happy opening day to all who celebrate. May your teams do really well, unless they're teams I don't like. I'm not going to throw any out there.
Mm. You already did one. The Dodgers.
I already did one. I do not like the Dodgers. I'm fine with saying that. I don't like the Dodgers. I used to be okay with the Dodgers because historically, like they're Jackie Robinson's team. They're the bums. Like there's a lot of lore surrounding the Dodgers. But then they turned into the most powerful team in the sport with insane spending power.
Yep, they became like the Yankees, just a little bit smarter.
Plus, they beat Milwaukee in Game 7 in 2018, and so that made sure that ensured that I would hate them for at least 10 years, at least 10. But the spending power thing really pushed it over the top.
Oh yeah, when you root for teams from Milwaukee and Cleveland, those big market teams are annoying.
Okay, so we both got our favorite baseball movies out there. I've got one of the baseball teams I hate. You have to give one baseball team you hate.
Oh, it's the Yankees for sure. Everybody who has a team in the AL is going to say that. Like it's like the Dodgers thing where they have all the money, but they don't even spend it that smartly. And they just like accumulate, they can afford to like miss on two or three top free agents and still win the AL East. And then you know what Yankee fandom is and the fact that like half the country wants to turn into like Yankee fans out of nowhere. And I mean, for me, it's like my family originates out of New York. So too many Yankee fans in the family. So it was nice. There's been a couple of years when Cleveland's knocked them out of the playoffs and they never hear the end of it. So, but then the last two times they played the Yankees, they've won in the playoffs. So that's been not fun.
Yeah. The Yankees, well, like the thing is, like I feel like the Dodgers kind of replaced the Yankees in terms of being the, like, the biggest, most outlandish spender, especially like this week, this off season when they just signed like every major free agent. It felt like, but that doesn't mean the Yankees don't spend a ton. Like, you know, like the only reason, because I hated the Yankees a ton when I was a kid. I think the only reason that they've waned a little bit or fallen down the list of teams I don't like is just because I'm in the National League and they're in the American League. That's pretty much it. I still don't want to see them do well. I'll just be honest. I enjoy that season quite a lot.
And they have a bazillion injuries anymore. So like karma's bit them a little bit.
Okay, this is my one last conspiracy theory. I know this is a lot of baseball talk for a football podcast, but hey, it's March 28th. Sorry. So Randy Johnson and Pedro Martinez killed the Yankees. So here's my very short case for this. Very short case for this. From 1995 to 2000, the Yankees won 4 World Series and 5 chances, right? And they were like it was like the Yankees, the way they're, the way we hear about them talked about, you know, historically, and they were supposed to be taking over power forever again. And then Randy Johnson and the Diamondbacks beat them in 2001. The Luis Gonzalez, you know, flip into left field. And then in 2004, Martinez and the Red Sox with the big comeback and everything else. Since then, they've only been, the Yankees have only been to one World Series, and they did win it, but that is much more like the rest of baseball than where they were headed. And I think that the two pitchers, right-handed and left-handed, who were at that time, like, you have to go look at their Cy Youngs, because they won like 7 of 10 Cy Youngs in that range, Randy Johnson and Pedro Martinez. We don't talk about this enough that we had both of them at their peaks right at the same time. Like, the two best pitchers of their generation ruined the Yankees. They made them like the rest of us by not allowing them to win.
What a shame. Quick fun fact, my grandma used to be George Steinbrenner's secretary.
And wow.
Clean up all of his letters and send them all out. It's back.
You're when he supposed was, to be a Yankees fan.
Oh, this wasn't with the Yankees. This is when he was doing business in Ohio.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then he left us and he didn't boost our economy anymore. And it didn't work for him anymore. So so that's a little fun fact. So maybe I should be a Yankees fan, but instead I'm a Yankees hater.
Nate's, I'm glad we dipped into Nate's hate here. I'm enjoying this quite a bit. For the Colts Cover 2 podcast, I'm Joel A. Erickson. This has been Nate Atkins. Like we said, have a good spring. We'll be back in a couple weeks.